I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Mike McArdle joins me now. The Global BC reporter has been providing viewers with those heartwarming, thoughtful, and often remarkable pieces that end the highly rated 6 o'clock news hour broadcast for nearly three decades now, over three decades now, I think. Thanks to his perceptive eye for the human condition and considerate sense of humor, we have a third collection of wonderfully crafted stories bound in The Blue Flames That Keep Us Warm, a delightful follow-up to the best-selling Chasing the Story God and Back Alley Reporter. McArdle doesn't fail to warm our hearts and lift our spirits. From Harbor Publishing, The Blue Flames That Keep Us Warm retails for $32.95. Partial proceeds will be donated to Variety, the children's charity. The previous two books raised over $25,000 for Variety in 2001 and 2002. I am very pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Mike McArdle. Good morning, Mr. McArdle.
Hello, and thank you. And why don't we just redo that intro over and over and over, and I'll sit here and listen. And think, holy mackerel, that sounds good. That's better than anything I could write.
Do you, when you travel around the Lower Mainland or Metro Vancouver, whatever we're supposed to call it now, do a lot of people recognize you on the street and so on?
Well, I hope so, because... Due to the hazards of the job, I appear most nights on television, and if they don't see me, they're not watching, and if they're not watching, I'm saying, what's wrong? Go turn on the television and let me try to make you feel better at the end of the day.
Did you appear on the NewsHour, it seems, every night?
Yeah, Sunday through Thursday.
And is it something that you still enjoy doing?
Oh, I love it. The only dread I have in my life is that I'm getting older, and... I don't know what the rules of retirement are now, and they change a lot, and in 15 months, I'll be 65, and I love being 65. I don't want to stop working, every day, I mean, I'm not pulling your toes or anything. Every day is an adventure, and I can't wait to get to work. I've been blessed. I love my job. I love what I do, and I could keep doing it forever.
Do people come up to you and say, well, why don't you do a story on such and such, or a story on me, perhaps? Did you take their suggestions at all?
Oh, lots of people do that, and they're all good in their hearts, and they see somebody who's doing good, and they say, why don't I do a story on what's his name or what's her name, because they deserve the recognition. And I'm thinking, well, in that case, why don't you bake them a cake and give them the recognition? Then I'll do a story about... How your neighbors and your friends think what you're doing is so super cool. Most of the things that people see are really neat when they see them. And they say, you should have seen my grandmother when she was, it doesn't matter, you know, she was helping some little kid cross the street, something super wonderful. Well, that's nice, but she's not doing it now. And we can't recreate anything. So what I do is go out and hopefully find the grandma who's helping the little kid cross the street, you know, and switching the roles and stuff like that. And people do give me ideas. Most of them are good in their eyes, but they are good then, and by the time I get there, it's over.
What's a typical day like for you when you're finding these stories? What time do you set out?
Oh, start out, I work... Work 8 or 9 hours a day, even though the actual work put in is minuscule, but the work of finding a story, my shift is 10 o'clock till 6, but I almost work whenever I can get a camera, whether it's before then or after then, and the camera guy and I, there's just camera guys now around, but there have been lots of camera girls, and we get out in a truck or a van or whatever they're driving, and... start going up and down the streets. In the summertime, I do a lot of walking. In the winter, well, less walking. But we just drive up and down and through back alleys, literally from start at Trout Lake and then go to Stanley Park, then go to Queen Elizabeth Park, then go down Main Street to the Fraser River. And every time we see somebody doing something. And, you know, when I get a new cameraman, he says, what are we looking for? And I say, if I knew what we were looking for, we would just go find it. But we don't know what we're looking for. We're just looking for somebody doing something that looks touching, warm, odd. It doesn't matter. Just a guy sweeping up on the street. And we stop, and I get out, and I talk to him and see if there's anything good or bad or different or new. Does he have six kids that are all... He's taken in foster kids. Did he just move into the neighborhood? Has he been here for 50 years? Whatever, and talk to them. And usually fail because the first one doesn't work, the second one doesn't work, the seventh or eighth one doesn't work. 4 hours later, we're still looking, and we go through them. This is a typical day until, wow, you hit that little old lady who is sweeping on her last day at the P&E, and she doesn't have any money, and she has one kid who is has a disability, and she has got three other kids, and she's making less than $10 an hour. And I'm just talking to her about anything, and then she says, and then I looked down and I saw, I almost swept it away. I saw a $100 bill. And I'm thinking, thank you, story gods. And then she says, I wanted to scream, but I couldn't because everybody would come over. And she says she put it in her pocket, and she brought it at the end of her shift. You know, she keeps on working. She's that dedicated. She goes into wherever it is. They put away their brooms, and she looks at it, and she can't believe what she's found. Oh, my Lord.
Watching,
that took 4 hours to find that that 15 minutes of stuff.
Watching you do these reports on TV, it looks so, and this is a great compliment to you, and it seems so effortless, and it seems like it takes you no time at all to do. Do you do the editing yourself?
Well, I work with an editor like I work with a cameraman, they are... I couldn't live without editors or photographers because the photographers see stuff and take pictures, and they take really good pictures. And basically, all I do is write captions to pictures. And excuse me. And the editors they choose the better pictures. And we do a lot of fighting, not bad fighting, funny fighting. We yell at each other and say, no, that one's better. No, that one's better. No, you're a dummy. This one's better. And then I write something, and I get an editor who's half my age. He hears me say it, and he looks at me and says, just shakes his head, or she shakes her head. There's a lot of women editors, and they say, I could write better than that. And I'm like, oh, God. It's like, you know, it's 6:30, and I want to go. And she folds her arms and says, I'm not putting that down. You write something better. And I'm like, what? Well, like, say something obvious, like, and she'll point to something in the picture that, she's sweeping and she's sweeping up the leaves of autumn. It's the end of the year. It's the end of the day. It looks like the end of her life. Say something about that. Okay, I could have thought of that if only I had opened my eyes. That's how much editors are important.
And
camera folks, the same thing.
Your pieces are wonderful. I guess in your business they call it a button to the broadcast. Do you purposefully do that because of the content of the broadcast, that the news that your colleagues are reporting is often too dreary or too serious?
Oh, yeah, that's the only reason I stay alive, is to do something that's usually uplifting or touching. Only once in a while is there anger in there, like... recently, you know, with all the killings, and you just got to get ticked off, or when a little old lady gets mugged at the SkyTrain, or some poor kid gets dragged to death under a car, you know, you gotta express the rage of not only yourself but others. But generally, I just look for something that's bright and uplifting. I spent 15 years doing nothing but murders and death and destruction and holdups and criminal court and jail cells and fires and that sort of stuff, and just didn't get tired of it. Well, sort of one day I got tired of it, but it was a growing accumulation of just seeing too many people that were hung up on meat hooks and shot and butchered, but had miserable lives, and I couldn't do anything to relieve that, but I could start doing nicer stories and bring folks a little bit, hopefully, a little bit of joy, happiness, because maybe that's contagious, too.
And it was your idea to do that on the air?
Oh, yeah. I just thought, you know, saying, you give me an assignment, and even when I started was still doing crime, I would try to find somebody who did something good in the crime story, and it just, I mean, I've been doing this for, since my took a while to grow, to evolve into good stuff. And, oh, Lord, I have never been happier. And I'm talking, you know, 25 years of happiness now.
Your broadcast has been a leader in a highly competitive market. We see changes to the newscast, sort of to meet the new challenges in the market. Do you feel any pressure on your own work?
No. Nope, they leave me entirely alone. I'm very lucky. I call up in the morning and say, good morning, and they say, good morning, and the boss, Clive Jackson, he's the assignment editor. He runs everything. The show comes out of his head, and I don't think he sleeps at all. But we just have a friendly chat, and he tells me what the main thrust is, he thinks, of the show will be, of the news of the day, and of course, if I can spin something off that, like Clinton coming to visit, you know, that's, I have to go there, because how can I pass up all those super rich people who all got free tickets to go see Bill Clinton? That was fun and funny, but he tells me what they're doing, and then the camera coordinator tries to get me a camera, and then the next time I talk to them is after we found something.
So are you watching yourself at 6 o'clock at home, or are you still...
I don't think I have gotten home in time to see that, I can't remember when. And then usually I go visit my granddaughter or something like that right after work, or pick my wife up from work, so, no, I don't see myself. Sometimes on the computer later or the next day at work, I can see how the story went, but no, I don't see it live.
And you mentioned your granddaughter. She's the little girl on the back of the book,
yes.
Right?
Yes. It's so nice of you to bring her up. Let's just spend the next 2 days talking about her.
She's an absolute delight, I think, to you and your family.
Oh, yeah. She's, I thought I had a good life up until she was born. Then I knew what a good life was. Now, it's all started all over again. Everything they say about grandkids is true. They're just, they remake the universe. And it's all smiling.
The title of the book comes from what?
Well, you see, the last two I thought of the title. And this one, I had like 10 proposals, like the last story before you go to bed, a nice thought, have sweet dreams, sort of schmaltzy stuff like that. Then the publisher is Howard White, and he's a cool guy. I met him 30 years ago when he first wanted to be a publisher, but he didn't have any money, so he's driving a bulldozer way up in Pender Harbor to support his need and wish to be a publisher. So, you know, you're talking about a cool, tough guy. But he says this should be the title, The Blue Flames That Keep Us Warm. And I say, that's crazy. That's the weirdest title I've ever heard. Sounds like an ad for kerosene gas. And he says, that's what it'll be. Because he owns the thing. And I say, why? And he says, read your own work, you dummy. So, you know, the first, excuse me, the first page is a story that I told a whole bunch of times. And so I wrote it as the first page in the book. And it's about when I was a kid. I had this drunken, brutal father, which almost everybody in the 40s did. They all came back from war and decided they would drink themselves into oblivion and then go home and cause pain and problems. And he'd come home at night and beat on the bedroom door, and my mother would push a dresser in front of it, and we'd both push against the dresser, and she'd say, don't worry, things will be all right in the morning after he passes out. And one morning, I'm about eight years old or so, and she wakes me up in the middle of the night with a shh, she says, and she's standing there with a suitcase, and I'm still in my pajamas, and I get a coat on, and we slip out of the apartment, and I take a subway, this is in New York, and take a subway ride right across town. I mean, I'd never gone that far in the subway before, and by the time we're going to the other side of the city where her sister lives, and by the time we get there, the sun is up, and I'm walking down the street with her, still in my pajamas, and I see my older cousin. He's outside their apartment sweeping. Well, I'd never seen anybody sweep outside in my life. I mean, this must be a big business that we're coming. And So I go inside, and I find out he's exiled to the hallway, which he thinks is the coolest thing in the world, but I know his mother's really ticked off that. And then I go to the school he's going to in New York. They got real romantic names for schools. P.S. 54.
Right.
They're all public schools. P.S. 54 I went to. And that year, we were taken on, classes taken on a field trip down, said, all right, everybody's going to come out. We're going to learn something. And we went down to the basement, and we went down metal stairs to the sub-basement. It's all big pipes and stuff. And we gathered around the furnace. It was a big school furnace. And the janitor opens the grating in the front, and we see this great big oval of gas fire, and he says, those are the blue flames that keep us warm. I mean, this is like a revelation. And then he closes it, and we go back to class, sit down. I think that's the only thing I remembered from elementary school. So 50 years later, maybe more, I'm a little older, and I'm on the other side of the world, and I'm here in my house with my granddaughter, and we're outside, sweeping. I'm sweeping her front, and she's holding on to the broom, and I don't realize the significance of us being outside sweeping until my wife says, the house is cold. So I come inside, and I go downstairs, and the furnace has gone out. And I call my granddaughter down. I light the furnace, and you know what I say to her? Those are the blue flames that keep us warm. And she looks at me with loving eyes and says, now can we have some ice cream? Okay, we go have ice cream. But I know that 50 years from now, when she has grandkids, she's going to light a furnace somewhere, or whatever it is they have, you know, but she is going to tell her grandkid about the blue flames that keep us warm, and she's going to say she heard that from her grandfather. And that's whether she knows, well, she'll know about the janitor because of the book, but whether she knew that or not is irrelevant. It's just that those are stories that go link us together. They're tiny little stories that she can tell at the dinner table that I can tell. And that's the premise for the whole book. These are tiny local stories that you could find anywhere. They're just outside your door. They're down your street. They're wackos, and they're nice people. They're some sad and some good, but that nothing has to do with politicians or warriors or labor leaders. They're all basically your neighbors.
And I guess, did you consider yourself a sentimental man?
Oh, I'm as mushy as it can be, of course. But also, I spent, like I said, a long time sitting in outside police holding cells and in New York in police stations and squad rooms at night and around crime and stuff like that. So am I sentimental? Yeah, I love being that.
The pieces in the book, are they all from television or are
yeah,
they?
All these are basically stuff I have done on television, but they're also mostly they are stories about these stories. They're how they were found, their updates on them, their the things I thought about some of the characters, stuff that you can't get into a minute and a half on television. But they are, the significance of them is that they are local stories.
How did you come about to, I mean, did you have to watch a lot of your own tape?
No, mostly I remember these, which is just fun to do because this will sound cliche and schmaltzy, but I remember most of the stories that I do because I fall in love with most of the stories that I do. And each story, on the day I'm doing it, is the most important thing I'm doing. Not only on that day, but it feels like forever. And when you meet somebody who is neat or funny, it's hard to forget them. So I go home and I talk about the wacko with the submarine. Oh, that's a real wacko. In New Westminster, the submarine in his apartment and
right.
Out on his balcony. And you can go down there and see that. It's still there right now. It's right behind the library in New West. And just go out the back of the library and walk half a block and everybody will tell you that's where it is. And you look up there and say, My God, that's like cannons and cowlings and radar stuff and periscopes up on the balcony. What's the apartment look like? So you go inside and go up there and knock on his door, and then you'll see what the apartment looks like.
That's a great story in this this book, indeed. The first two books were such big hits. I'm surprised that it took 5 years for this third one. What took so long?
I just got involved with other stuff, and I wasn't even thinking about doing a third book until granddaughter was born. And I she took up my entire life for a year and a half. I mean, I just stared at her. I mean, she was so wonderful and still is. But the first book I dedicated to my wife. We've been married for a long, long time. And the second one to my kids, and then I thought, well, that's enough books. And then came along granddaughter, and I thought, well, wait a minute, I should dedicate a book to her so I get her name in a book. But wait, I have to write the book before I can dedicate it to her. So then I started making lists of stories that I remembered the best and the original thing. This is about, what did they say it was, about 85 or 90,000, they say 85,000 words in there. That's only relevant because the initial thing that I wrote of all the stories I wanted in it was 125,000 words. So, wait a minute, we can't put, you know, that would make the book too heavy for anybody to pick up.
It'd be Brian Mulroney's book.
So it took longer to cut the stories out and to trim some of the stories down than it did to, well, that's not quite true, but it took a long time to for me to say, which of these stories is not going to appear? And it was heartbreaking. I don't want to leave that one out, or that one, or that one, or that one.
This has already been a big hit. It's already number one like the other books. Are you planning another collection?
Oh, I got a couple of other ideas of books, and so long as I'm getting close to retirement, I might as well write them.
How long do you think you see yourself doing this job?
As long as they let me.
And then do you plan to go on?
Seriously.
Yeah.
You know, if they say there's mandatory retirement at 65, well, then less than a year and a half, I'm out. If they say you can stay on for a while, I'll stay.
What about a DVD of your favorite stories?
Well, that's not my doing. I'd love to do that. I've done 7 half-hour specials, and 8 if you count the Remembrance Day one, which are then, up to that point, you know, stories that I liked a whole lot. And they have all run, but it's up to the TV station to do that. I, in the most commercial way, they own the stories. They own the tape. They own they're nice people. I'm, you know, not saying they're whatever. But the station owns the stories. If they want to put it together, they can. They can sell it. They can give it to, I'd love for them to do that and give it to charity.
Mike, I'm a great admirer of your work, and I love this book as well as the previous ones. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.